is the peace our hearts are seeking. Love, love, love is the gift of Christmas. Love. The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the second chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Now after the Magi had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night and went to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they were no more. When Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are seeking the child's life are dead." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in the place of his father Herod, he was afraid to return there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled. He will be called a Nazarene. The Gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
I invite you to be seated. The season of Christmas is a bit like, at least in the year of Matthew, is a bit like Holy Week. If you come to each of the services during that time frame, it carries you through a story, one that moves you across many emotions. You have the wonderful glow of Christmas Eve, soft, comforting, familiar. The rejoicing of Christmas Day, trumpets blaring, angels singing. And then in this text on the first Sunday of Christmas, a reminder of the historical reality of Jesus and his life. Speaking of historical reality, some wonder, well, did this slaughter of the innocents actually take place? Well, there are no other records of it in the New Testament or elsewhere. And while Josephus, who is a Roman Jewish historian of the time, tells us that Herod ordered the execution of three of his sons, all of which to protect his own rule, he says nothing about the Bethlehem massacre. However, according to the historical record, it does show that Herod was the kind of man who would do such a thing, especially if he felt his rule threatened. Given the population of Bethlehem at the time, it would mean about 20 boys aged 2 and under would have been killed. And while horrific, certainly for the families and for that community, one must ask if history would have recorded or even remembered such a small number. After all, UNICEF in August reported that 972 children in Ukraine have been killed or injured by that violence since the beginning of the war. That's an average of 5 children killed or injured each day, and most sources agree that's an undercount and is certainly over 1,000 by now. In the 7-year war in Yemen, at least 3,774 children have been killed by that combat, more than one child a day. Here in the United States, as of the time I was writing this sermon, there have been 307 children aged 0 to 11 killed by gun violence, which includes homicides, accidents, and suicides. In May of 2022, a gunman killed 19 children at a school in Uvalde, Texas. 10 years ago, last year, at Sandy Hook Elementary School, a gunman killed 20 children. How much are we aware of those figures? And how much do they shape our lives? Do we even remember them after 10 years, much less the decades that separated the writing of Matthew and Jesus' birth? Or do they just kind of fade into the background of an all too violent world? It shouldn't be surprising to us that the deliberate slaughter of 20 boys by a violent and capricious king in a small suburb of a backwater country of the Roman Empire wouldn't rate historical remembering in that time, much less ours. And so this is likely the reality for Jesus and his family, that to stay there would mean certain death for him. And so if it was your child, your son, what would you do? What would you do to save him? Would you leave everything behind, all that is familiar, your culture, your language, your family, and move somewhere out of reach of those trying to kill him? There are others who face this very question right now in our world. Another UNICEF report in June of 2022 reported that conflict, violence, and other crises left a record 36.5 million children displaced from their homes at the end of 2021, the highest number on record since World War II. That figure included almost 13.5 million refugee and asylum-seeking children. The rest of them were internally displaced due to conflict and violence. And remember, all of this was before the invasion of Ukraine. Closer to home, we've seen a dramatic increase in immigrants arriving at our southern border, including children, both accompanied and unaccompanied. Why do they come? Well, poverty is one reason. In Honduras, half the population lives below the poverty line. And in many places in Central America, especially rural areas, there are a lack of jobs, there's poor access to education, health, nutrition, very little sustained investment by the state in infrastructure or services. All of that has been exacerbated by the pandemic, and so this abject poverty, no hope of alleviation, drives many to leave. But for others, the choice is not unlike that of Mary and Joseph. The significant social violence that characterizes daily life in Central American countries, many of them, is also a major driver of migration. Violent gangs target poor, vulnerable community members and seek to recruit, extort, or otherwise intimidate youth and their families. And it is also a harsh reality that women and young girls in Central America are especially vulnerable to sexual violence and exploitation. Those countries have some of the highest femicide rates in the world. So, many come to our border seeking safety because to remain in their homeland means the very real possibility of death for them and or their children, a circumstance not unlike Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. But can we really compare the Holy Family to those fleeing the fighting in Ukraine by going to Poland, to those fleeing to Europe from Syria, Afghanistan, Yemen, to the United States from Central America? Well, as with most things, the answer is both yes and no. The no side of the argument says, well, Jesus and his family never left the Roman Empire, that they fled from one region of Roman territory to another region, kind of like fleeing from one state of the Union to another state in the Union. They argue it was legal, it was funded by gifts of the Magi, it was temporary. On the other hand, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees defines a refugee as someone who has been forced to flee his or her country because of persecution, war, or violence. A refugee has a well-founded fear of persecution for reasons of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group. The argument for Mary and Joseph's refugee status here is about as strong as it could be under any circumstances. It's true that Egypt had recently come under Roman rule, and so while Mary and Joseph were fleeing Herod's jurisdiction, they're still in the same Roman Empire. But since most of the known world at that time was ruled by the Roman Empire, as one historian put it, that's a distinction without much of a difference. At the very least, what you can say is Mary and Joseph were displaced by a violent government that would kill their son and sought refuge in a foreign land. However, I would argue that the question of whether that would qualify them as refugees in today's terms is a moot point when it comes to how we treat those who come to our borders. The borders of our nation, the borders of our community of Ely, our own borders. Why is it a moot point? Because Jesus has already told us that he is present in those hungry, fearful, hopeful people who come to our borders. He does this in Matthew 25, where he says that when we feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, we do so to him. Because there is not one human being that we look into the eyes of who is not created in the image of God, who is Father to Jesus, whose life is sacred for that reason, if no other. Yes, there are laws which govern who can enter our country and for how long and for what reasons, and we are a nation of laws. However, the last major revision of those laws was in 1986, 36 years ago. I was 16. As for me, the United States and the world, much has changed since then, hasn't it? And it would be wise to think it might be time to revisit those rules in the face of those changes. What in your own lives do you still do the same that you did in 1986? Regardless, within the system that we have, we treat each of those who cross our borders as if they were the Holy Family, with respect, dignity, and compassion, striving to do right by them, regardless of whether the law says they can stay or they must go. The other reason we do this is the strong and consistent admonition in the Hebrew Bible, our Old Testament, to care for the ger. This is Hebrew for stranger, the temporary resident, the alien. Any of you been reading through the Bible with me? You've seen this, haven't you? And the reason for that repetition comes because of Exodus, which we just got out of. It assumes that most strangers require the support of the community. It reminds Israel that God loves the stranger. And Israel should love them, have compassion on them, since the Israelites were strangers themselves in Egypt. Leviticus 19:33, "The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as one of your citizens. You shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I, the Lord, am your God." Deuteronomy 10:17, "For the Lord your God befriends the stranger, providing him with food and clothing. You too must befriend the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." If nothing else, our text today reminds us that this faith is not just about me and my relationship with God. It is about the real consequences of our individual actions, but also the ones that we take as a community, both as the community that is the church, but also the community that is our nation. Actions that can, in very real ways, decide whether someone lives or dies. It is into this world, with all of its harsh realities and difficult and complex choices, that Jesus Emmanuel, God with us, has entered into to transform, to show us a different way of being with one another. One rooted in love. Love of stranger. Love of enemy. Love of friend and neighbor. One rooted in that love lived out in the sharing of food, water, shelter, community. In the ethic of the Sermon on the Mount that this grown-up child will preach in just a few short chapters, which includes things like give to everyone who begs from you. Do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. It is this Jesus who makes all things new. Us, our society, our world. It's New Year's Day. A moment in our culture where we have a chance to start anew, right? It's that moment where everybody says you get another shot. A chance to change, to be transformed. We make resolutions that this year I'm going to get more in shape. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to learn a new skill, take a trip, get more involved. And perhaps we might resolve, with the help and guidance of God through the Holy Spirit, that we as individuals and as a community of faith will strive for justice in the world and in the way in which we treat those who are strangers in our land. That we might give a portion of our time and attention to those who flee violence and death for the hope of a peaceful life. And perhaps we might resolve to do so for the sake of the child born to us at Christmas. The visible sign of God's love for this broken and messy world. For the sake of Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us. Thanks be to God.